Hello and welcome to the Naked Podcaster. Today I have Dr. John DeGarmo on. And John, I'm so excited to have you on. How are you, first of all?
I'm well. Thank you for asking.
You were on June 20th of 2017. That information will go in the link in the description. And we talked a lot about your story. You've had a lot of changes in the last 4 years, which I'm not surprised about. I've kept track of you through 4 years. I was ecstatic to keep track of you for this last 4 years. And I want to jump in. We'll, like I said, we'll have the link to your last video. But you are known as, first of all, your website is drjohndegarmofostercare.com. And same thing, you can pretty much find you everywhere, Dr. John DeGarmo on Facebook. You've been listed everywhere. You're an international foster care and parenting expert. So let's just jump in there.
Sure.
Tell me what that looks like for you to be an expert and what that means, because it means a lot.
Well, when I say expert, I want to preface this. I am learning every single day. But, you know, I've had over 60 plus kids come through my home, as many as 11 at the same time, as many as 7 in diapers. I kind of have a good idea of what parenting involves, if you will. I've written lots of books, work with foster care agencies, child welfare programs around the nation. If you look at my makeup, my family, you'd see it's very diverse. So now what I do is I help others on parenting issues. I help others with foster care and adoption issues. I help others with all those family-oriented issues, working with legislators, working with child welfare programs, working with foster and adoptive parents, working with parenting organizations. I just got offline with the University of Maryland Social School of Social Work, and I was talking to their future social workers. We're taking classes there about what these issues look like.
Wow, that's fantastic. I know I did. You've done 17 years. You're still foster parenting.
Well, we're actually taking time off at the moment.
Because
I'm doing a lot of work in Washington, D.C. right now. We're working with legislators. And so as I'm not home as much.
Okay, so I have 15 years in foster care, 12 as a parent. And then I stopped being a foster parent and I went into working for a nonprofit as one of the program supervisors. My job was to recruit and train foster parents who were treatment level foster kids. So the toughest of the tough. Here in Nevada, they make a segregation. I don't like that word, but they score the kids when they come into foster care. They have a whole bunch of questions that they ask and the situation they come from. And when kids score a certain number or higher on that, they're considered treatment level, which means these kids have been through more. They've been through more stuff. A lot of them are in and out of juvenile detention. A lot of them are in and out of mental institutions. They have bounced a lot of foster homes. And so they're kids that have gone through more trauma.
Right.
So I worked with treatment level foster kids, and I know you have too. And every state looks at that, even every county actually looks at that in a different way. So I know you've worked with kids that were considered treatment level.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah. Sure. And when I stopped and I stopped doing foster care, I realized that there was this pocket of parents that were really, really struggling. It wasn't just the foster kids. It was the foster parents through that training. And so I didn't realize that that's what you were doing. You were focusing a lot. I knew legislation. Let's start there. What does the legislation piece of this look like?
Well, I've actually been working on this. Well, initially I went to Washington DC last July with celebrity actress Jen Lilly. She's a Hallmark movie superstar actress. She's also a foster adoptive mother and a dear friend of mine. And we went to Washington, D.C., working with legislators on pre-reunification, which is when reunification happens too early in foster care. Now, the end goal of foster care is reunification, and I'm pro-reunification, as is Jen. But there are those times, though, when the children are reunified with their birth parents, and the birth parents are not ready yet. They don't have the support services in place yet. Maybe they've not got the therapy that they need. Maybe they don't have the help they need from their own trauma and anxiety. Maybe they're still suffering in some way. And as a result, they're not ready. The children come back and it could go awry, if you will. Sometimes the children, 20 to 30% of those children come back into foster care, far more traumatized, filled with more anxiety. Sometimes it even leads to death for these children. In fact, I was just on the show Nancy Grace Crime Stories yesterday, talking about this very topic. A little girl, 2-year-old girl by the name of Melody Vang, was in foster care in Minnesota. She was in a stable family, and she was reunified with her birth mother, with her other siblings. Mom herself was in foster care. Mom had never got the help that she needed, and mom beat her 2-year-old daughter so badly and then put her on the front, on the back porch with only a diaper in 26 degree weather. Child died. So sometimes that happens. So we were talking to legislators in DC last July about, hey, how do we end this pre-reunification and make it safer for the children, make it safer for the birth parents, make it safer for everybody? And how do we add another layer of stability or security or protocol to reunification for involved? So that's the way they're for initially. Still working on that, but now I'm working with legislators too on the Child Welfare Provider Inclusion Act, which is designed to protect faith-based foster care agencies. There's a push, if you will, by the current presidential administration to defund some of those, well, not some, many of those faith-based foster care agencies. And if we do that as a nation, we will lose thousands upon thousands of foster parents in our nation at a time where it's critical. More children coming over the border right now, thousands of unaccompanied children coming over the border, no place to go for these children because there's not enough foster homes. In fact, they're asking California foster parents if they can take more children, in fact, up to 26 kids in a home, which is unthinkable.
Oh my gosh.
Unthinkable. They're having a crisis there in Texas as well. We know that during COVID, child abuse has gone up. We know that during COVID, human trafficking has gone up. In fact, we're seeing more children coming over the border from human trafficking right now because it's so easy to come over the border right now. Those human traffickers are exploiting the current administration and bringing victims over. And some of those children are being rescued. Again, where do they go? So if we close the homes of thousands of foster parents, what are we going to do as a nation for these children when we need foster parents even more right now?
Right.
So it's a rough time right now for all of it.
I knew in my area and following some of the kids that I've had that the calls are going up since COVID happened. Some of it's financial. Some of it is like, we don't have to be around our, we're around our kids a lot more when COVID happened, when school shut down, than we have been in the past. And that's created a lot of stress. So in situations that are already stressful or volatile, it's escalated, but we call CPS here, but basically social services also is shut down and limited. And I know from cases that I follow here locally that they are reunifying faster with less safety parameters, and it's putting kids right back into a situation that is absolutely not ready. I love what you're doing with the reunification. Is 100% the goal. If you can have a positive, successful reunification 100% of the time, that's what I would want. Even right. Kids that I love as my own, I would want them to go back to their family.
Right.
When that is most likely not the issue, I mean, I think for people in foster care like you and I who have been involved for so long, we know that statistically that's not likely many of the times. And so then what? It's kind of like conditional logic. Well, what happens now? If this happens, what happens next? And you're right. Less parents, more volatile situation, less support from social services. What are we doing? So I know it's been really hard to watch foster care through this pandemic for me. Incredibly hard.
Right, right. Absolutely right. Yep. And I worked with a lot of agencies. You know, I started getting phone calls left, right, and center starting last April and May when we were panicking as a nation and shutting everything down. And all of a sudden foster parents are screaming out, hey, these kids are not getting the professional therapy and counseling sessions they need. They're not getting one-on-one visitations. They're not going to school and getting the support services they need. As a result, their anxiety levels are through the roof. We as foster parents, we are struggling with our own issues of, are we going to have a job, food on the table? Hey, I might be concerned about the virus or my health concerns. And I got these kids in my house 24 hours a day now, and they're not getting the support services they need. This is hard. I'm going to quit. What do I do? Agencies are scrambling together to address that. They're also scrambling to get the foster parents the training they need while at home. So,
right.
Last week of May, June, it was almost nightmarish for foster care agencies.
I can only imagine. My husband and I did have a conversation about getting relicensed in this situation for very specific cases. And so far that hasn't felt like the right avenue. However, that's really, as you know, when you're a foster parent who's a really committed foster parent and that has lots of years in the trenches, I haven't had as many kids in diapers at once. I've had 3 kids in diapers for years. I've never had 7. That should be illegal. I watched your TED talk. And that's another thing. You were on TEDx. And on your website, drjohndegarmofostercare.com, it's right there. Less than 19 minutes. I watched that. And the story that you told is a story I'm real familiar with, right? About Sydney.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I've lived that story as a foster parent. And then there's the side of it where foster parents sometimes get a bad rap, or it's not something that people want to do. And you think, oh my gosh, until you've walked this path, don't judge and don't focus. Like if you focus on the positive, there's far more positive happening. What I think a lot of people don't understand that you don't get when you're just a parent of your biological kids is respite and how vital that is for parents in the foster care system.
Right.
How tell me about that through this pandemic. And also, because I've been in situations with foster kids that have been really, really, really tough placements where respite was necessary for it to be successful.
Sure, sure. And foster parenting is a unique lifestyle.
Yep.
It's a unique lifestyle that I never understood until I became a foster parent. I believed all those myths and misconceptions that were out there. But you know, now I tell foster parents, hey, your friends, your family members, those closest to you, they don't truly, truly understand or appreciate what you do and what you go through 24 hours a day. When you have children in your home who are suffering from anxiety 24 hours a day, who have eating disorders, sleeping disorders, behavior disorder, anxiety, reactive attachment disorder, trust issues, yeah, attachment issues, whatever it might be, 24 hours a day, your friends and family members really don't appreciate what you do. And it's hard. It can be emotionally, physically, mentally exhausting.
Yeah.
So that respite is essential, particularly during this COVID time of COVID, when in some states foster parents could not go out and the kids are in the home 24 hours a day and the caseworkers could not come to the home because of the restrictions in place. Wow. So wow. Respite is, I'm an advocate of respite. Before yes. COVID, I was telling foster parents, hey, you know, take advantage of respite. There may be times where you got to go out of the state for a funeral or a wedding, or maybe your child's graduated from college and you can't take the child with you. There might be a time where you need to go out with your own spouse just for the weekend to get away, or your own children to circle the wagon, so to speak, and get that little mental health break, if you will, so you can recharge those batteries and keep on going with that child.
Yep.
And there are some people who just want to be respite. That's all they want to do. So it's a win-win for everybody. They're able to do their part in foster parenting, you're able to take care of what you need, and the children can go to another stable environment and probably have a fun time, mm-hmm. because those respite parents are probably going to spoil them in some fashion because right. they're such a short time. So I'm a big advocate of respite, particularly during COVID.
I am also, I think it's like the oxygen mask put on first, and self-care goes into all of that, right? You need to give yourself what you need to continue to be successful before it becomes urgent, before there are issues, because it is constant. There's always been a joke in my house because I didn't know if I could get pregnant and have children biologically. And I did. I got pregnant 7 times. I gave birth to 4 kids, but that was unexpected. So in my house, there was always a joke, like with the adopted and foster kids, like, mom chose me. You were just a crapshoot. She didn't know what she was getting biologically. So it was really fun that, you know, I'm glad that my kids grew up in an environment where if you were a foster kid in my home or you were adopted in my home, I chose you. I said, and you know, you say no more than you say yes, because there's so many kids that need help, or you have kids that come and go, and you've done that to a lot bigger volume than I have. I had fewer kids come through. The ones I did generally stayed or stayed long-term, and you've done a lot of different stuff that I haven't done, but you know, these kids have never been chosen before.
Right. Right.
Right. And it's exhausting. It's exhausting to do it.
Sure. Sure. And sometimes those children come to our home with issues of attachment and trust, and they don't,
yeah.
You know, I often tell people often say to me, they must be so happy to be in your home. No,
no,
they're not.
And why should they be?
Right, right. My home is not their home. It's not my norm. Is not their norm. I'm not their, at the end of the day, I'm not their mommy and daddy. I'm not trying to replace them. They have issues with trust. They're scared. They're confused. They're worried. They're frightened. They're filled with questions. Yeah, scary. Scary being placed in care.
You address that pretty well in the TEDx talk. And I think, I mean, you address it very well. I don't think people really grasp what it's like to get a phone call in the middle of the night as a foster parent and get a placement. Like, it disrupts your whole life and your whole family. And you're like, yes, we have a bed, we can do this. And you have very limited information when that happens. It's like a bullet point list. It's a more urgent situation. I actually liked emergency placement. And those kids, I mean, as hard as it is on the parents' end to get everything ready and figure it all out and move things around in their house. You talk about this in your TEDx talk. I just don't think people get it enough, or it's talked about enough. This child, it's the only home that they knew, and they will lie and cheat and steal and to protect who their parents are, because they're their parents, right?
Right.
It's like this biological need to stay with your parents and protect your parents and hope it will get better with your parents and want to fix it and think it's your fault. The last thing these kids want is to be removed from their, you know, what we consider a terrible situation, to be put in your great home. It does not look like that to these kids.
Right, right. Absolutely right. And that's why it's so scary for these kids. They all have this ideal, and we all have an ideal image of what our family wants to be like, what our family should look like. We all want that ideal familyhood, that mother and father. So we're going to protect our parents.
Yep.
At the same time, the abuse, the anxiety, the trauma they've gone through, that's their norm. That's their norm.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't know anything different. And I knew, I grew up in some dysfunction, and I knew as a kid, it wasn't right, but I had nothing to compare it to either.
Sure, sure.
And sure. As a kid, you can know, like, you start to figure out not all the kids get beat at home. Other kids have food to eat. Other kids have clothes to wear. It takes probably junior high school to really figure out, even if you're in other homes. I was in my best friend's home and they were upper middle class. It didn't click for me though, how dynamically different our homes were and our home life was, and to make sense of that. Kids are not processing it the same way. This is the only thing they've known. And yes, it may not seem right, but you know, when you have nothing really to compare it to, and you don't have enough time in, you know, we tell our kids, like, you haven't had enough life experience to understand that. And that's okay. These kids haven't had enough life experience to compare it to. So I was really glad that you explained all of that in your TEDx talk, what it's like for the kids. And also, you mentioned already a reactive attachment disorder, RAD. Most of these kids have it. And how you described it in TEDx was how we usually think of it. They'll be distant. They won't make eye contact. They won't speak. They won't be able to show or feel affection towards you because they really don't have those skills. And you had the opposite. It was very funny when you described it. But RAD can look different, and people kind of, I remember having a conversation. So I'll say this, and then I want you to totally jump in. Of someone being somewhat offended or taken aback that kids ate at the dinner table in a way that seemed barbaric in our standards, because the use of forks and spoons and knives was almost not there or not being done well. So jump in on that one, because these kids come to us at a certain level.
Again, that's their norm. That may be their norm. You know, right. I've had kids in my home who have been 7, 8, 9, who didn't know how to write their names. I've had kids 4 years of age who couldn't speak one word. I had a child at 4 years old who just could say two words, me hungry. That's their norm. All his teeth rotted out because he was still in a bottle of Diet Coke at 4 years of age. You know, that's their norm. That's their norm. Right. You know, so, you know, that's the least of my concern is if they're eating at the table barbarically. Yeah. You know,
I know, I was like, we may need to dial back and reevaluate meeting them where they're at and what that looks like. Because
my wife's a doctor in nutrition, and in our house, it's all organic and nothing really processed. So a lot of discussions at our table is, what's this? Oh, this is a carrot. What's this? This is broccoli. What's this? This is green beans, because they've never had that.
Yeah.
It's just processed junk food. If at all.
If at all.
Right. Right.
I had a brother and sister come to me once and they were left alone for days. Mom had been gone for days. The electricity in the house was out and she was 9 and he was 8 and she was rationing a jar of honey.
Right.
If that's where you're coming from, then yes, you're not going to know what some things are. You have to learn, and like we organic and really healthy too, and you have to learn to be super patient. And I remember buying things at the grocery store. I absolutely abhorred buying to bring into my house to bridge the gap a little bit, because you want the kids to eat and warm up to what a carrot is. Offer it and it's there and you take a tasting bite. But I remember in one situation actually going to the store and buying some junk food just so that there was something familiar on the plate, you know, and these are things people don't even think about. And these are little things.
Yeah. We had a child that all they ate was canned SpaghettiOs, all 100% time. That's all was in the house. Another child was just frozen hot dogs, you know, and Coke. So, you know, again, it's their norm.
It is their norm. Tell me about first of all, getting on stage and being on stage as a TED Talk presenter, because that was that's really pretty cool.
That was a wonderful experience. I loved it. Loved every moment of it. It was a lot of fun. I wasn't nervous because this is what I do. I speak on stage to other people. It was very natural. The audience was very receptive. I think I opened up a lot of eyes and hearts to the speech, which was my goal. I wanted to bring awareness to these issues, not only people in the audience, but worldwide. Because afterwards I had, you know, they were coming to me left, right, center saying, hey, we didn't know, what can we do? Thank you so much for giving us a speech, what can we do? We didn't know. And that's how most people are. They don't know. They don't know about these things. So that was great. In fact, I'm working on a second topic, 5 ways to help stop human trafficking.
Okay, that was actually to end the TEDx conversation or kind of wrap that up. At the end of it, you gave 3 or 4 examples of ways people can help. And I think that is a super important thing to really drive home. Not everyone wants to be a foster parent and not everyone within foster care, like you said, there are people that just want to do respite. There are parents that just want to work with high risk medical babies.
Right.
There are all of these specialties within foster care that if you decide to go that route, you can really, you know, chunk it down to something very, very niche specific and only work with those kids. And that is such a value to the other foster parents. That's one thing. If you're not interested in being a foster parent, there is this huge laundry list. These kids quite literally come with a garbage bag, if that, of what they own that kind of got thrown in, usually in the middle of the night. I mean, often in the middle of the night. They don't own much anyway, and it's almost all they own. And they've left behind everything familiar. So there are a myriad of ways people can help without going the route of foster care.
Absolutely right. Amen. So many ways. Clothes closets, hygiene items, school supplies, food items, helping foster parents during the holidays, you know, transportation, being a mentor, if you have your own business, hiring some teenagers, teaching them some skills, helping them open up a bank account. So many ways.
So many ways. I loved the, we have a program here, a backpack program also. And I loved, that was one of the things that you mentioned. If you buy a backpack and fill it with items so that every child who goes into foster care gets handed a backpack, you just can't possibly understand the impact that that has. Right. And it's not just the kids, it's the parents. When a child comes into your home, yes, you're paid for foster care. You are. And kids have Medicaid for their therapy and medications. I have never kept track of how much I've spent on a foster child. And I can guarantee 100% of the time I'm spending more than I'm getting. And I certainly appreciate that assistance. But especially when a child comes in, there's this bulk of items that need to get purchased that aren't being covered. Like you said, school supplies, hygiene, clothing, shoes, they don't have it. And you mentioned a stuffed animal too in the talk. So let's segue to sex trafficking, which is massive and frightening. So jump in and start talking to me about that.
You know, right now we're seeing an uptick in human trafficking. We're having children flooding over the border during this, because there have been changes in this current presidential administration and how they handled the border. And so human traffickers are taking advantage of these other opportunities. And as a result, we're having thousands of unaccompanied children coming over the border, many of them victims of human trafficking. And those who are being rescued, where do they go? They're flooding into foster care system that cannot handle it. Also during this time, the last 12 months, I have been far more concerned myself personally, and I might get some grief from this, but I've been far more concerned about the mental health aspects of social isolation than I am of the virus itself.
Absolutely.
Or of any virus, okay?
100%.
When these children are online, at home, all day long, and they're living in an environment of neglect or abuse, and they're going online looking for some attention, looking for some love, looking for some comfort. And their predators have been recognizing that, and they've been taking advantage of it. And the parents are maybe online in another room doing their own work, or maybe they are in their own work in place at work, whatever it might be. Yeah. These children are left alone all day long in front of a computer. Predators recognize it, and they're snatching these kids up with false hopes and false promises. You know, again, I am far more concerned about the mental aspects and of what we've done to these children, of what we've done to these children in our nation during the 12 months, I think has been, we have not even begun to recognize the damages to these children. When I hear of children who are 4 years of age, who are already on antidepressants.
Oh my gosh.
And told, don't hug grandma, don't hug mom and dad, you could kill them. Oh my gosh, what is that doing to their little brain? We as a nation did not think this through last March when we panicked.
I have very strong opinions about this, and they are at least where you started is just the tip of the iceberg. I'm on the same page completely. I mean, yep. I call this the plandemic. So I'm like that. Yes. And that, again, that is personal opinion. And I'm not saying that the virus isn't real and people aren't being affected by it. I just don't think it. I think we're being asked to really look hard over here where something else is going on over here. And part of what's going on over here is the mental health of everyone, but especially these kids. And you're right. Especially with kids that we were told, you know, it doesn't affect the kids that much. Well, great. Then why are they being punished for it? I think there's so much more going on. And yes, they're suffering. Also, doesn't this prove how important it is as human beings to have connection?
Oh, yes. Right.
Because what are they searching for? These kids are online missing their friends at school, missing the stuff that they had, missing interaction, having different interaction in the home. And like in my home, it's not negative interaction, but it's different now. Not as much right in our home, but every time we branch out to the community, it's different. So my 11-year-old daughter is affected by it. You know, even though I homeschooled before and I'm homeschooling now, it's different outside of our home. And so that's affecting everyone. And you want, we're desperate for connection. What happens to a baby who's not touched?
Right, right, right. And we're also seeing, absolutely right. And
failure to thrive, right?
But there are those people out there who say, don't touch the, you know, I'm hearing stories about kids who are being told, don't touch grandma.
Yeah.
Don't give grandma a hug. Children need hugs.
Yep.
They absolutely need hugs for their well-being, for their development. And then we have studies now of little children who are having developmental delays in language development because of talking through masks.
Right.
You know, my wife and I made the conscious decision in last March that we're going to lead as normal a lifestyle as we possibly can for our children's sake.
Yep.
And our children have remained remarkably healthy.
Yep.
In all areas, not just virus wise, mental health, physical health, social, because we didn't disrupt their lives, because are we protecting their kids? Absolutely. Absolutely. We're doing everything to protect. Well, we always have done that.
Right. Right.
You know, we're not placing our children in danger. So anybody watching, don't get upset about that.
No.
But we are, again, the mental health, the aspects, and we're going to, it's going to affect generations.
I agree.
And then we haven't even addressed the issue of learning loss.
Oh,
haven't even begun to address that.
There's a 94% fail rate in the U.S., the last thing I read. And that may be slightly off, but the schools, I'm in Washoe County, Nevada, and we have been rated one of the worst school systems, school districts in the nation for the last few years. It's in the top five all the time. It's been close to number one. I think I could drive like 15 miles in any direction and be in a better school district just because I'm outside of the county, right? So already we're facing issues with that. And I wanna know, where are the best counties in the nation and why aren't we all modeling them, first of all? And what are the best countries in the world and why aren't we modeling them? That was before the pandemic. Now I'm at a complete and total loss at the education system, and not at the teachers. I'm not upset at a single teacher, but just the system and how we've set it up and how we've supported and the whole, now we've had a year, let's get it together. Why is there still, I am just so disgusted by that, and that's not a high priority in our nation to get our kids properly educated in a different way. We've had online schools for years, and they've done a really good job. Why didn't we just go to some of the top online school programs and curriculum and the way they had it designed and set up from the IT on and model it? We had the ability to.
You know, the longer we keep kids out of school too, the more at risk they are, not only of learning, but of human trafficking, of social, of mental health, of child abuse. We're keeping these kids at home in an environment where they're not safe. Many children go to school for meals.
I know.
So we've kept them from that as well. It has been, you know, and these are the questions I brought up last March, a year ago. What are we going to consider these things? No one said it. Well, we've got to mask up, put your mask up, stay away, don't touch me, stay 6 feet apart. What about this? What about this? What about this? What about this? Stay 6 feet apart. We're going to die. My goodness.
I know.
And you know, and then we focus on things like, well, they all have to have the hand sanitizers. Well, how about those children who are born with fetal alcohol spectral disorder? When you're putting, and hand sanitizers are made at 65% alcohol, and which crosses the blood-brain barrier, which seeps into these kids and causes issues for children who have fetal alcohol spectral disorder. Doesn't matter. Doesn't seem to matter to anybody. I'm like a bell ringing in the, no one's listening.
Right.
It's very frustrating.
I feel your frustration, and I am definitely mirroring it back. We've done the same thing. We're going to be safe. We've always been safe. I'm not concerned. That's not even an issue. It's not in our vernacular to not be safe. That doesn't exist. However, we've tried to keep it as normal as we possibly can. And some of that is finding people or groups or families or whatever that want to still connect in a safe way. And by safe, I mean, I'm hugging them. So, you know, I mean, like, wash your hands and hug them. Anyway, sex trafficking in this situation, like you said, meals for school, huge. So nutrition's been an issue. Grades have been an issue. Predators and sex trafficking, the lack of social services being able to be involved due to restrictions, schools being involved due to restrictions. Mm-hmm. What else do we have going on? And do you have, we didn't pre-game this at all, but do you have any statistics on human trafficking, sex trafficking right now? I know you have an article on your website about it.
Cool. I don't have the statistics offhand. I couldn't just grab them out of there for you.
I have it up right now. So increase in child abuse, and people can find this information if they're really interested and want to make a difference and understand this. Our daughter plays Fortnite and she's 11, and her dad plays with her a lot, and there's a chat and stuff, and we have been doubled down on. We've always been very, very concerned and aware with all of our kids. And of course I taught about sex trafficking, and so I'm very aware of it, but we have doubled down on that. We have not had a single issue. I'm almost surprised that we haven't, because statistically, you know, she very easily could have gotten contacted. Right. 100 to 300,000 children are exploited commercially for sex each year. They're shipped across international borders. I know in Reno, we're on the California border. And if they can get them over state lines, it changes everything for us. Right. Go ahead and go into that a little bit, as far as the sex trafficking, what the process is of them contacting them, getting a hold of these kids, and where they're brought and what.
Well, children in foster care in particular are very, very vulnerable, because they are victims. They are victims of neglect, victims of abuse. They are vulnerable, weak children. And predators recognize that, and kids in foster care go online looking for acceptance, looking to belong, looking to find somebody that will accept them for who they are, and looking for love. And so they're vulnerable to all those false promises, false hopes, and that's where they get lured in, because they want to belong. They want to think that, okay, this person actually likes me. Maybe this person loves me. Maybe this person really wants to help me. Maybe this opportunity they're talking about is a real opportunity for me to escape, you know, the foster care system, modeling or whatever it might be. And then during COVID, you know, again, 5 million children experienced domestic violence in their home before COVID. And now you're shoving all these kids in the homes, unmonitored, online, unmonitored. And let's not fool ourselves. These kids are not spending 8 hours a day on schoolwork. No way in the world are they doing that. My kids
right.
are not doing that. And I don't expect my kids to spend 8 hours a day online. Right. When I was at home with my kids, you know, we spent three hours in schoolwork a day, you know, 9 to 12. 9 to 12, we did half an hour of this, half an hour of this, break time, half hour of this, half hour of this, break time. And then by noon, we were outside, playing outside, working in the garden, whatever it might be, you know, or learning music or art, whatever it might be. Because there's no way my kids are going to, I don't want them in front of a computer 8 hours a day. I don't want them in front of a computer 4 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And then to be left alone, you know, I was in the room with them all the time, but many parents don't. They're all doing their own thing. So these kids are, who have experienced all of this abuse, and that is their norm, or they've been raped, and that is their norm, and no one is watching who they're talking to online or what they're accessing online. That's game time for these predators.
Yeah, 100%. COVID basically gave them like an open door. Yeah. It gave them an open door to, and And here's the other thing. I mean, they're smart. They're targeting the kids that are easier targets.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it's kids in abusive situations and in foster care situations. And it's easy to find them because of the demographic, the location of where you live in a town. We know where the bad places in town. So that would be one way, right, to locate kids. Or, yeah, it's not hard. And we just gave them like a green light almost. So,
yeah.
They get them across international borders.
Well, we can look at our border right now. You know, our border is easier to access, right now.
Yeah.
Easier to come across right now. The restrictions have been lifted in some ways. And the predators are sneaking them over that way. I'm actually not even really sneaking them over. They're just bringing them over right now. Very easy to do so, you know.
And then I want to talk about the difficulty in getting these kids out of these situations, because it could be a parent it could be a kid who's not in an abusive or foster care situation, and a child can be taken. It doesn't exclude that at all.
Right.
So if I have a child that's taken and I'm actively trying to pursue finding that, how impossible is that?
It's very hard, very hard. And these children are almost brainwashed.
Yeah.
Into believe, you know, they groom these children.
Yeah.
Absolutely groom these children. I've experienced this. They groom these children. You know, they don't want to go home.
Nope. As a matter of fact, they'll run away to go back. And yes. That blows people's minds. But
right.
When you think about a kid who's been in an abusive, neglectful situation, because predominantly that's the target, and there's this person who is giving them food, giving them clothing, giving them a bed, probably nicer to them than anyone's ever been. And yeah, maybe hits them every once in a while or makes them do things they don't want to do, but it oftentimes is less than the home that they came from. And even if it's not less, they're still getting all these other things, right? The clothes, the shoes, the love, the acceptance, the you're doing great. And if they've been sexually molested or abused or raped in the past, this is not different. As a matter of fact, it's better. And this is the thing that I know blows people's mind. Sex also can feel good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So right. You think about these kids who are teenagers who are forced to have sex, except in my life, sex feels good. So yep. What if not only are they groomed and set up, but they're sexually traded and not abused and it feels good. So yeah. They like it.
And this is why we don't want to discuss this as a nation. This is why I call human trafficking America's ugly secret. We just put the blinders on. We don't want to address it because it makes us feel uncomfortable. This was an awkward discussion. Let's talk about something else. I'd love to go back to sports. Let's go back to our movie stars. Let's go back to our reality series. Let's argue about politics, but not this, because, oh no, this can't be happening in America. No, this can't be happening in my state. No, this can't be happening in my city. No, it's not happening in my neighborhood, in my
right.
family. No.
Right. And even if you can do some sort of, you know, extraction from there, you have these kids that have been so brainwashed, and heaven forbid, John, we mentioned the fact that these teenagers may enjoy the sex that they're having at some level because it's the best they've ever been treated. Like, that is such a taboo subject. How could I have the audacity to even say that? But I've talked to these teenagers, so I know exactly where they're at. And is that sick and demented and horrifying? Yes.
But
it's not, it's not all beating you up and raping and abusing, and it's not all horrific. They've actually groomed them so that it can be a positive experience, and that's even more frightening to me.
Positive experience for in their mind.
In their mind. Yeah, it's not a normal or okay situation, but comparatively speaking, it was much better. And finally, somebody loves them and takes care of them. Yes, I've had kids in the foster care system running away to their pimp.
Yeah, right.
So,
or even running away from their birth parents.
100%, 100%.
Yep.
So it's really scary. And I hope that by discussing it more openly, it does make people at least stop and think, because it is uncomfortable. I want to segue into something that I think is a more fun topic, and that's wife swap. Because and then after wife swap, I really want to talk about the positivity that happens in foster care, because we have really addressed a lot of the stuff that's scary and maybe negative, and we have talked about ways to help, but there are a lot of really great stories. So I do want to end on the really great story. So let's jump into wife swap.
What do you want to do?
I read it and I was like,
Yeah. So we get, you know, my family and I have had over the years lots of reality shows approach us.
Right.
You know, she's from Australia, he's from Michigan, living in the deep south. He worked in professional wrestling. She's a doctor of nutrition. He's a foster care expert. They've adopted kids. They've got kids from different colors. Blah, 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 blah. It must be a unique story. Let's share this story. In fact, we actually had a pilot produced a couple years ago that was all set to go on a major network. And it got pulled at the last minute because of the Duggar incident. If you remember what happened with the Duggar family.
I don't remember. I don't know what happened with them.
Well, you can find out. I'm not going to go into detail about it.
That's fine.
So when YSWAP approached us, my initial reaction was, no, you should be ashamed of yourself. The title is horrible. There's no way. No. Well, no, we'd like you to reconsider. No, I'm not. This is awful. How embarrassing. I said, well, we want to show, new network, new producers. They want to show social issues and cultural justice, whatever the phrase they used. So we did a lot of prayer about it. And we thought, okay, if we can show foster parenting and adoption in a positive light, if we can bring attention in a positive manner to what foster parenting looks like today, to what adoption looks like today, to what a blended family, if you will, in the deep south looks like today, then this is what we need to do. So we did it, and it was interesting.
I couldn't watch the whole episode. I watched a couple 2 or 3 minute clips. First of all, I hadn't actually ever seen your wife and listened to her talk and stuff like that. So you weren't on these clips, and the other husband wasn't on these clips. It was both of the women. And one of them was when you first go into the house and the house is empty and you get to look at the book, like the about me rule book. This is about her family. And it was, I mean, wow, that was great. That was great, because you couldn't have been more
polar opposite.
Did she ever do anything with your kid's hair? Just out of curiosity.
She did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was not my kid's focus, though.
No. So what did you, very interesting situation. What did you get out of it?
I'm hoping that the nation saw what foster parenting adoption looked like.
Yeah.
What do we get out of it? Another adventure in our lives. You know, my wife and I always have adventures. And that was just another adventure. I gotta tell my wife, this is another adventure for us, you know, so that was an adventure. You know, I don't think the person who came to our house was a lovely lady, but she was not prepared for our lifestyle. You know, we are outdoor people. We're outside all the time. And so she's a very much an indoor person. And I remember we went for a walk. Okay. Let's go for a walk. So the tow producer, we're gonna go for a walk. We walk around the neighborhood a lot. Okay. The producer said, how much time do you need? 2 minutes, shoes on, we're going. Took her 2 hours to get ready. Going for a walk outside. Got the right shoes, the hair, the makeup, the nails. Like, oh my gosh, my family does not do this. You know, and there's kids all the time in our house, and we are not online. We are together playing fun games and outside swimming and riding bikes and blah, blah, blah. So my wife goes to her house, and they have two small children, and all they do is online. That's all they do. You know, the fact that the little girl films YouTube videos every day. And so my first thing my wife did when she was in control was unplug. And so she's taking the girl out, and you know, the first time this little girl is taking her shoes off and she's running outside with bare feet in the grass, never experienced it. They're catching fireflies, never experienced that. This is what we do in our house. She loved it. Little girl loved it. And The sad thing was, and this was not, my wife wanted to delete this.
Yeah, I think yeah. I saw it.
Little girl said, you know, I want you to stay. I don't want to go back to my, I want to go back to, I want this lifestyle. You know?
Yeah, I saw
was,
that.
That was rough. That was a rough moment. And more, I was like, ah, she's doing this camera, cut, cut. They're saying, roll, roll.
Right.
No.
Yeah, and then your wife said, holy cow. I mean, like off camera later or whatever. She was like, holy cow, help me. I'm in over my head. I don't even know how to handle this or what to say. The little girl was coloring on the bed and said, I want you to stay. I like you more than my mom. And yeah, crazy, huh? That some fireflies could do that, but there you go.
Well, I think it was not screen time, it was me time.
Yeah.
One-on-one parents, child, doing things together instead of online. You know, online is not healthy.
Yeah. Crazy. So adoption, you did it. Do you feel like the network and the situation lended itself to what you were hoping as far as getting more exposure for adoption and foster care?
I hope so. I think so. I'm surprised how many people watched. I still to this day say, people say to me, were you in wife swap? Yep. Yep. Or were you in the other thing? Yep. Yep. So it's good. It's good. Awareness. Awareness equals advocacy. Awareness yeah. equals advocacy.
I was glad, I guess, because I've been approached, not in a situation where there's a pilot, but I've been approached before about the possibility of reality TV shows, and I've been adamantly opposed to it. And I think that that's too bad because it really does lend the possibility of more, you know, and showing things in a really positive light. You just, once you can't control the narrative and the cameras are on all the time, I'm glad that you guys were brave and you did it. It was very unexpected in my mind that you would have done it. I was really proud that you guys went ahead and did it. I thought it was great.
Well, you know, we feel blessed in so many ways, and we want to show America and the world, this is what a, if you want to call it a racial family looks like, if you want to call it that. You know, to me, we're all the same race, a human race.
Right.
We're all the same color, just different shades of God's skin. There's no label. There's no biological adoptive or foster. These are all my children. This is my family.
Correct.
This is what family looks like.
Right.
Love knows no color.
Right.
So we want to show that to people, you know, to break down those myths, break down those stereotypes, break down those judgments people have.
Yeah. Especially in the South. I mean, you're in the South where I'm not experiencing the same level of prejudice or question that you would be having a mixed race family or a, which kids are yours?
Yeah.
Right. You know,
and then we also live in a world that's very divided nation. I should say a nation that's very divided and it's very divided online.
Yeah.
Good grief. I don't even begin to express how I might feel about a certain topic online. 50% of people to come after me. So we thought, okay, well, here's what we can go online and show people, you know, this is what it's like for us and it works for us and hopefully maybe it'll work for you. And again, this is love, what love looks like. This is what family looks like through so many pieces coming together and blending into what I think is a beautiful mix.
I do too. I struggled being offended, feeling offended when people asked which ones are yours, because I wanted them to see us the way I saw us. I think people really just want to make sense of it though, of how it all works. I don't think that they're asking the question maliciously. I just feel like they don't understand that when you're handed a child at any age in a foster care situation, in any situation, and that child is there, that becomes your child. And you do not feel differently. I do not love my children differently. I respond to them differently because they have different personalities or needs, but I don't love them or think about them differently at all.
I also don't like when I get this question a lot when I'm in my younger ones. People ask me in front of the kids, are they mixed? I say, they're fully human.
Yeah.
They're not part craft.
It's kind of like when you're pregnant, people are like, what do you have, Anne? I'm like, well, I hope it's a baby. I mean, I'm not expecting a litter of puppies at this point, yeah. But you know, like
people ask, are they African-American? I say, they're Australian-American. They say, what?
Yeah.
More Australia. They really struggle over that one. Australian-American. What? You want to throw a label out. I'm not in the labels.
See, I'm not either.
No. So right. I say, people, you know what? That's an interesting question. Are they, I'm Swedish. So are they Swedish, Australian, African-American? Are they Australian, Swedish, African-American? Are they American, African, Swedish, or Australian? Which one comes first? Which one comes in the middle? Which one comes last to you? Because to me, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Do you want to discuss anything in particular? I like to end on a high note, so I love talking about positivity, but I want to kind of give you the floor if there's something that you want to make sure that we cover in the interview that I haven't asked you about.
No, I think we've covered it. I just want to stress this. You know, foster parenting to me has been the biggest challenge I've done. It's also been the most rewarding thing I've done. Mm-hmm. It's been the most difficult thing I've done. It's been the most joyful thing I've done. It's been a wild roller coaster of emotional adventure. And every child has made me a better person in some way. I never thought I'd ever do it, you know, years ago. And now I think, besides marrying my wife, the best decision I ever made.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would encourage people, and as we mentioned earlier, not everybody can be a foster parent, but there's so many ways we can help children in crisis. I've been to Nicaragua. I've been to Mexico. I've done those mission trips over field. They're great, life-changing for me, but there's a mission field in our own backyard. It's a mission field where we live. Yep. So we don't have to go very far to find children in crisis.
No, your backyard, basically, your yep. neighbor's house.
And sometimes even within our own members of our family.
Let's end on some happy notes and success stories. Do you have any you would like to share?
So Easter, we just had, at Easter, we had one of our former kiddos, if you will, our house, so much dear member of our family, came to us when she was 17 years of age. I write about her in my book, Fostering Love.
Okay.
In the book, I call her Helena. And a life of pure, pure tragedy, a life of pure abuse, just horrific. And she is such a success story now. She came to our house with her family, her two kids, Easter, always at our house. She's a caseworker now, wonderful family, incredible. She's an incredible mother. So we had a great time with her just a couple days ago, Easter, with, you know, running around. Her kids are kind of like our grandkids running around collecting Easter eggs. You know, great. I think of another one right now who just finished college and he's moved to Nashville to start a job. You know, lots of great stories.
Yeah. I want people to know that you can make a significant difference in the life of a child. Sometimes even in passing, you know, sometimes without even realizing it.
You know, I end my TED talk by saying I can't change the world and you can't change the world, but for these children that we care for, their world has changed. And I think that's what we do. You know, we might not see it, but we might not see those seeds that we plant, but those seeds are going to blossom into something more beautiful because of our love that we give them.
I totally agree. I had a daughter She came to me when she was 9, and they ended up trying reunification too early. And then she went back in the system and bounced around. She was with us some of the time. She was with me some of the time, but basically from like 12 to 17 kind of bounced. And my home was one of the places. And she wrote me something I'll read because I want people to understand how good it can be. She said, I want to say to you that because of you, I have never given up on reaching my goals. This comes from a simple hill. I remember the day we were driving by a hill and I said I wanted to climb it. You took me there and I climbed it. Such a simple thing stayed with me forever. When they took me from you, it was the worst time in my life, but you stayed and were always present in my life, which always got me through. You are who I learned to take the higher road and not be vindictive. I love you so much. I'm thankful I have you as my mom. And that's not a kudos to me. I don't remember bringing her to do that. I've had probably way more errors and mistakes, but it can be something so simple that she didn't think she could climb this hill. And I was like, let's go climb the hill. And she did it. That was it. That was all that happened. It probably took 20 minutes of my time and I don't even remember it. And that's the kind of difference you can make. I know that because somebody made that difference in my life. And I know because as just like with you, when these kids become adults and on their own, we see that, holy cow, we actually did make a difference in the life of that one. And we did something that one time. And Dr. John, you're making a significant difference by being part of legislature, being internationally recognized, continuing to take in foster kids. And I'm so proud of you, but I appreciate you so much.
You're very kind. You're very kind. Let me tell you, this has been one of the most fun interviews I've done in a long time.
Oh, so
I appreciate the opportunity. This has been fun.
Good. Thank you. Thank you for being on.
Yeah. Whenever you're ready. I'm sure there's lots more we talk about.
There is, anytime. I'm making changes, so we'll talk about that.
Sounds great.